Chapter 3, Analysis, Considering Outcomes, Context, and Learners. Abstract. Analysis is the initial stage of the WBID model. At the beginning of this stage, problems are investigated and potential solutions are identified. If online instruction is considered the viable solution to the problem, the second phase is to analyze the four main instructional components within the situation: the instructional goal, instructional context, learners, and instructional content. The findings from these analyses provide the foundation for how the instruction will come to fruition. This chapter begins with a discussion of the first phase analysis, problem analysis. Included in this discussion is determining the causes, symptoms, and solutions and identifying the procedures for gap analysis. Next, we address the first three components of the instructional situation, examining their purposes, methods for gathering data, and procedures for documenting the findings. We devote Chapter 4 to a thorough discussion of the remaining analysis component, instructional content analysis, and the associated implications of the analysis process. Objectives. At the end of this chapter, you should be able to do the following. Define terminology associated with the analysis stage. State the purpose of the analysis stage. Identify the two phases of the analysis stage. Distinguish among problems, causes, symptoms, and solutions. Determine when a problem or gap analysis should be conducted. Decide the type of solution required. Identify the four main components of the instructional situation. Classify the instructional goal by the categories of learning or other taxonomy. Write a preliminary instructional goal statement. Describe important aspects of the instructional context. Describe pertinent attributes of the learners. Introduction. The first stage of the WBID model is analysis, Figure 3.1, as is true for most ID models. Hannum and Hansen consider analysis as one of the most complex instructional design stages, and this is no less true for online instructional design. Hannum and Hansen further state that because analysis is considered to be a time-consuming stage and, therefore, expensive, it often leads to the stage being shortchanged in projects. Yet Rothwell and Kazanas counter that argument by suggesting that through expedient planning and careful execution, analysis can be both efficient and cost-effective. Carefully planned and expedited analysis has the potential to save resources by increasing the likelihood that only appropriate solutions are identified, designed, and implemented. The adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, is often true when conducting an analysis. Purposes of analysis. Analysis involves examining a performance problem as well as investigating the various components that affect how a solution is designed and delivered. This stage is sometimes called front-end analysis or needs assessment. Other terms associated with the analysis stage are problem identification, problem, or gap analysis. The main purpose of analysis is to obtain sufficient information to identify performance or instructional problems within an organization, suggest alternative solutions, and select and justify the most appropriate solution. If it is determined that the best solution is an instructional one, then a second purpose of this stage is to analyze the components associated with the instruction, that of the instructional goal, context, learners, and content. In the WBID model, the analysis stage has two major phases, problem analysis and analysis of the instructional components. Problem analysis. In the problem analysis, problems are investigated and appropriate ways to resolve those problems are identified. Instructional design and performance system models discuss defining a problem as determining the actuals, identifying the current conditions and happenings within an organization, and the optimals, identifying the desired conditions of what should be occurring within an organization, as well as determining gap, the difference between the actuals and optimals. Problem analysis, also known as gap analysis, involves two preliminary steps. 1. Determine the nature of the problem, or gap between actual and optimal. 2. Determine if and how the problem can be resolved. The designer asks questions to gain multiple perspectives about the problem. How many people are affected? When did the problem become evident? What is happening at the present? How do you know there is a problem? Ask, what is being accomplished? What is not being accomplished? Are there deficiencies? Is there urgency to the problem? And so on. Where is the problem? For example, are some locations more affected than others? Are some locations more affected than others? Through such questions, the designer identifies the causes of the problem and ultimately its potential solutions. Rossett and others suggest a variety of methods and tools for gathering data. Table 3.1 presents several problem analysis methods and their corresponding tools. See Appendix A for information on other data collection methods and tools for analysis. Note that these analysis tools may also be used for evaluation. Determining the nature of the problem. Determining the nature of the problem involves identifying the needs in an organization, which come from a variety of sources. Problem analysis is conducted when an expressed problem occurs due to anything from changes in content or technology to changes in policy and procedures. Table 3.2 highlights changes that may occur within any organization that would signal a need for a problem analysis. Table 3.2 highlights changes that may occur within any organization that would signal a need for a problem analysis. Problems, causes, and symptoms. Rothwell and Kazanis examine the gap between what is happening and what should be happening in terms of causes and symptoms. They, as well as Ostschuld, suggest that a cause relates to why a problem exists. Symptoms relate to the indicators or effects of the problem. Often managers or clients, and sometimes designers, may simply be reacting to symptoms rather than getting to the rudimentary causes of the problem, which may leave the actual causes unknown and the problem not solved. Rothwell and Kazanis suggest that managers, eager to use a new technology for delivery or any new innovation in the instruction or training, may create problems that do not, in reality, exist. In other words, they consider that the lack of having an innovation as the problem. This situation occurs for school or university administrators, instructors, instructional designers, and personnel in other sectors, not just in business and industry. As an example, administrators and teachers in PK-12 schools may observe that students' standardized test scores are below the national average. However, low test scores are not the problem, nor are they a cause of the problem. Rather, these low test scores are a symptom, or the consequences, of an existing problem. It is essential that the cause of the problem be identified to alleviate it. With this example, the PK-12 school officials would need to ask questions such as, why do low test scores exist? In what schools, grade levels, or curriculum areas do these low test scores occur? Are test scores similar throughout the district? What are the conditions in which low test scores occur? By addressing these questions and others, the school administrators and teachers may discover the actual problem and its causes. Only then will any proposed solution prove effective. Solutions mistaken for problems. From time to time, solutions have also been mistakenly identified as problems. For example, university administrators and faculty may state that they need online courses. However, not having online courses to offer to students is not a problem in and of itself, but a solution in search of a problem. The university officials need to examine whether offering online courses and programs would have a positive impact on the university's mission by asking questions. Why do we need to offer online courses? How can online delivery improve student or faculty or staff learning and/or performance? How can online delivery allow us to do tasks more effectively than at the present? Will these technologies make routines easier, less cumbersome, less complex, etc.? Will these innovations provide faster or better quality instruction, service, etc.? Will these innovations reduce training costs or time? What kind of administrative improvements might be seen? By investigating how online courses relate to the university's mission, its faculty, staff, and student body, they may identify a true problem for which online courses might be the solution. The causes of problems. Causes of performance problems have been widely discussed in the literature, with three of the most common lists developed by Rothwell and Kazanis, Rossett, and Stolovich. Rothwell and Kazanis' list is the most comprehensive of the three. They categorize performance problem factors into three major levels: organization, work groups, and individuals, identifying and explaining within each level specific factors to identify how that factor may affect performance. Finally, they determine questions for each specific factor to identify how that factor may affect performance and pinpoint the underlying cause of performance problems. Stolovich identifies two main causal factors, environmental and individual. Environmental factors include data information, feedback, and environmental supports, resources and schools, and consequences and incentives. For individual factors, he offers skills and knowledge, individual capacity, and motivation and expectations. Such factors may be generally or specifically related to a performance problem. Rossett considers four factors as the main causes of performance problems. Her most current list relates to human performance needs, while her 1987 list identified similar factors but limited their scope to training needs only. In her 1999 list, she describes and provides examples of each factor in terms of anything lacking within the individual, in terms of skills, knowledge, or motivation of flaws in the workplace that would make it difficult for the employee to perform well or at all. Determining if and how the problem can be resolved. The second step in problem analysis is determining whether the problem can be resolved, and if so, whether it can be resolved by instruction or by some other means. Not all problems are resolved by training or instruction. Hannum and Hansen state that in many organizations, quote, training is often considered not a solution, but the solution, end quote. They maintain that training or education is often recommended, not because it is the correct solution, but because it is the most convenient one. Too often, managers or administrators suggest that implementing training or education, even though some other factor has created the poor performance. In many cases, managers tend to ignore or not conduct a careful examination of the symptoms and causes to determine whether training or instruction is an appropriate solution. For example, the evening shift at Company Z falls behind in their paper towel productions, yet the day and night crews often exceed the specified output. Company Z production manager has required that all personnel attend training on maintaining quotas. However, it may be more expedient to find out the cause of the evening crew's reduced production. For instance, it may be due to equipment malfunctions when the maintenance team is on call rather than on site, or due to absenteeism, or so on. Generally, causes for which instruction is the solution relate to lack of skills or knowledge. Although problems related to a lack of motivation could be resolved through instruction, other interventions may be more effective. When motivation and the other factors are the causes of performance problems, non-instructional solutions may be applied, such as updating job aids, adding resources, streamlining work logistics, changing or providing additional incentives, restructuring departments, disciplining an individual, and so on. As the focus of this book is online instruction and learning, we only mention these other performance problem solutions here. Determining if online instruction is appropriate. As a matter of purpose, the inherent assumption that online instruction is an appropriate solution to any instructional problem is simply not true. Online instruction must be used appropriately to be effective. Sometimes in the zeal for using a new innovation, its actual viability is overlooked, and the success of the online design project suffers. Determining an appropriate solution to a problem requires considering the instructional strategies or methods and the available delivery systems. Although sometimes viewed as separate entities, the two concepts, instructional strategy and delivery system, are often intertwined, partially because of when decisions of strategy and delivery systems are made. Decisions related to strategies and delivery systems occur at two main points during instructional design. At the first point, where delivery strategy decisions may be made, is prior to selection of the instructional strategy, and perhaps even prior to the start of the design project. When a delivery strategy is selected this early, it may be because of an assumption by the designer, administrator, manager, or client. Smith and Reagan, however, suggest that early selection of a delivery system may occur because of the type of ID model used, for example, rapid prototyping, or because of a large and early investment in resources for technology, support staff, and so on that a delivery system might require. As an example, in some large organizations, strategic decisions about online instruction are made early on. A specific LMS is often mandated because of price and compatibility with technology and human resources. Such mandates could affect the designer's choice of instructional strategies due to the types of tools in the LMS, their ease of use, and how well they function. When the instructional delivery decision occurs early, the designer is able to, in fact, must, consider capabilities and limitations of the LMS as she or he select instructional strategies. In this type of situation, the technology, LMS, may drive the instructional methods. Some types of instructional goals or content for web delivery may be precluded because of such limitations. When a delivery strategy decision is made early, designers should consider questions such as the following. What are the goals of using online delivery? Do proposed instructional strategies fit online delivery? Do the proposed tasks fit with online delivery? Alternatively, most designers prefer to select the delivery system after determining the instructional strategies are chosen. Choosing an instructional strategy before choosing a delivery system allows designers to be flexible in recommending the best solution for the instructional situation. In other words, the delivery choice should not drive an instructional project. Designers who can choose instructional strategies prior to the delivery systems also may factor in problem analysis findings and implications. Choice of instructional strategies then drives delivery system decisions. Designers in this situation should ask questions such as the following. Do the capabilities of the LMS, delivery system, fit the instructional purposes based on the findings from the problem analysis? Do the capabilities of the LMS, delivery system, fit the subject matter area? Do the capabilities of the LMS, delivery system, fit the organization's policies and procedures? Determining the appropriateness of online instruction isn't always a clear-cut decision. For instance, it may require additional resources as well as support staff. The designer might need to consider the following questions for determining the appropriateness. Is there time available to design and develop this type of instruction? Are there resources, budget, personnel, and tools available for the design of the instruction? Is content available, or is there a subject matter expert, SME, available for consultation? Are learners available to take the course? Is there an instructor who is able to teach the online course? In addition, it is important to note that online instruction is still more appropriate or easier to use for some types of instructional content than for others. Some types of outcomes within the psychomotor and affective domains may not be as suitable for online delivery, especially those with outcomes that require careful observation and precise feedback on the individual's performance. High-speed video capture and motion analysis software is available to capture and analyze precision movements in sports and dance, as well as for physical therapy. This software could be integrated with online or blended types of instruction. However, online instruction would be appropriate for teaching concepts and fundamentals of various sports and games, e.g., the purpose of the game, rules, number of players needed, basic scoring procedures. Additionally, the web may be an excellent delivery medium for instructor-learner discussions on issues and concerns related to physical fitness, such as best types of exercise to reduce stress, good sportsmanship, and whether college athletes should be paid. Instructional outcomes within the affective domain that require instructional strategies of role-playing observations and feedback on verbal and nonverbal language and other nuances of a given situation may not be executed well in an online course. However, using a blended format might be an option for such content. Examples include observing empathetic counseling, applying anger management techniques, demonstrating negotiating skills, or assertiveness training could be difficult. However, online instruction may be well suited for other topics, such as theories of counseling and psychotherapy. Documenting and reporting problem analysis. Written documentation begins as the problem analysis phase is completed and becomes part of a larger report, known as the design document. Designers use design documents as a written record of the processes that have taken place throughout their application of the WBID model. It provides a written record, supplemented with tables and figures, of what has occurred within any part of the WBID stages. Design documents become increasingly valuable when online design projects are complex and if, at various times, team members work independently of each other on separate aspects of the project. The design document becomes the means for coordinating such efforts so that an integrated and cohesive outcome prevails, that is, a well-designed online course. Because human memory often fails and perceptions are often inaccurate, a design document keeps the lines of communication open among team members and stakeholders. It is also an important tool to maintain accurate records that are available to all who are involved in the online development project. The design document records the procedures for data collection and analysis and findings for the problem analysis phase. The designer identifies the problem, possible solutions, and provides a rationale for the selected instructional solution. This part of the design document also includes who is involved in the analysis, what materials were analyzed, and the methods used to gather data. Samples of the instruments often appear in an appendix. Charts and tables may be used to further illuminate the text. The design document usually begins with an executive summary, followed by the body of the report, which contains the complete details. Designers are tasked either simply to identify potential solutions for decision makers or to recommend a best solution from those identified. The design document must, therefore, contain sufficient information about the solutions so that decision makers can confidently choose a solution and also see clearly the rationale and justifications for the designer's recommendation. Gardenscapes. Originally, there was a single course on home gardening and landscaping in the Department of Continuing and Distance Education, CDE, at CJC in Westport, a small town in the USA. Garden Basics, Just Another Day at the Plant, earned high interest and has experienced growing enrollments over the last 5 years. The goal of Garden Basics was, and still is, to teach basic gardening concepts such as soil types and climate zones, and to distinguish among plants that are used in the area. In addition, the course covers the care and use of basic tools for lawn and garden work. Cali has received tentative approval for developing a second course, teaching amateur gardeners to design sophisticated gardens and yards and incorporate focal points and other landscape features. She gathers ideas for the course elements from several sources, previous evaluations, follow-up interviews with former participants, and data on unsolicited emails to the CDE requesting additional gardening courses. Elliot assisted Callie in a literature review to document that interest in home and garden and do-it-yourself home projects has increased greatly in the last 5 years. Trend analysts have noted the expansion of home and garden stores and superstores, book and magazine coverage, and home and garden television programs and networks. Based on the literature review and data from her previous course, Callie and Elliot write a proposal for this second course and submit it for final approval. In the design document, the actual and optimal performances are used to identify the problem, the gap. The following chart is included. Actuals, individuals with basic gardening skills. Declining student enrollments. Problem, gap. Lack of skills between basic and advanced gardening. Add new students, maintain current population base. Optimals, skills in creating a themed garden design. Increase student enrollments. The problem statement reads as follows. Increasing numbers of homeowners are spending additional time in their own yards and gardens. Many of these individuals do not have the knowledge and skills needed to landscape their properties. They need information beyond the basic knowledge of garden tools, plant types, and climate zones. The new course, Gardenscapes, will cover advanced gardening skills. The course will help participants develop a garden design that will improve features of their home landscapes. Callie and Elliot conclude that the web is an appropriate delivery system for the course. With the course developed for online delivery, the following purposes can be served. 1. The audience can work from their homes rather than coming into campus on a specified night at a specific time, providing student and possibly the instructor with flexibility and convenience. 2. Links to garden and landscaping websites can be incorporated into the course to add to the learner's knowledge and skills. 3. The course could attract new learners from distant locations. Consequently, final approval is granted. The approval proposal becomes a part of the design document. Elliot, the instructional design intern, will continue to help Callie design and develop her online course. As previously mentioned, Carlos Duartes will supervise him in coordination with his university supervisor, Judith Chauncey. Analyzing components of the instructional situation. The second phase of analysis examines the four components that make up the instructional situation: instructional goal, instructional context, learner, and instructional content. Identifying the preliminary instructional goal and its outcome level sets the stage for the rest of this analysis phase, Figure 3.2. Instructional context analysis examines the environment in which instruction and learning occurs. Learner analysis looks at pertinent characteristics of the intended participants. The elements of the instructional content are decomposed into main steps and subskills during the instructional content analysis. Based on the findings from these analyses, designers arrive at the final goal statement. The analyses also reveal issues and implications for the remaining WBID stages. For the remainder of this chapter, we discuss analyzing the first three instructional components. Chapter 4 is devoted to the fourth component, instructional content analysis, and implications of each component analysis. Typically, designers gather and analyze information about the instructional goal and outcome level first. The sequence varies for addressing the remaining three components and is usually left to the discretion of the designer, who bases the choice on project tasks, personal preferences, professional experience, and educational background. In our experience, it makes sense to analyze the learners and context prior to the instructional content. Other designers prefer to begin by analyzing the instructional content. Choosing which sequence to follow is a matter of preference and training. What is the instructional goal? Goal identification refines the problem statement into one or two sentences that focus the instruction. An instructional goal is a general statement of what learners will be able to do after the instruction is completed. The type of learning outcome for the goal is then identified. Such goals must be able to be achieved through instruction rather than through some other means, e.g., job aids, changes in incentives. According to Dick et al., an instructional goal provides the designer with a clear statement of learner outcomes and is related to the identified problems and instructional setting. Determining the type of learning outcome. An important part of defining the instructional goal is to identify its learning outcome level. A learning outcome, also termed domain of learning, refers to a specific type of learning associated with the goal and is based on the findings from the problem analysis. There are several classification systems for identifying types of learning outcomes. Two commonly used classification systems for learning outcomes are the categories of learning and the taxonomy of objectives for the cognitive domain, commonly known as Bloom's taxonomy. The categories of learning provides outcomes of affective domain, motor skills, cognitive strategies, verbal information, and intellectual skills. The category of intellectual skills is further divided into a taxonomy of five skills aligned in a hierarchical order. With each category, Gagne designated a specific action verb known as a learned capacity verb, LCV, that is associated with each of his nine outcomes. The original Bloom's taxonomy classifies cognitive domain objectives into five subcategories. However, it was updated by Anderson and Krathwall in 2001 with the inclusion of metacognition skills, which is similar to Gagne's category of cognitive strategies. Bloom's taxonomy revised outcomes have had a slight reordering from the original and are as follows in ascending order: remember, understand, apply, analyze, evaluate, and create. One other change was using a verb rather than a noun for each level. While instructional designers know the Gagne's categories of learning, Bloom's Taxonomy Revised tends to be better known by classroom teachers. Both classification schemes have stood the test of time. Other taxonomies have been developed, such as the Taxonomy of Objectives for Affective Domain, that identifies outcomes related to attitudes, emotions, and beliefs. In ascending order, the affective levels are receiving, responding, valuing, organization, and characterization. The taxonomies for motor or psychomotor domains have been developed to identify levels for physical skills. Simpson's Taxonomy of Objectives for Psychomotor Skills was one of the first and has 7 outcome levels that include perception, set, guided response, mechanism, complex overt response, adaptation, and origination. Other taxonomies, such as Singer, the learning of motor skills, have been developed. Instructional designers and classroom teachers are not as familiar with such taxonomies. They are more often used by those professionals associated with effective outcome, school counselors, counselor educators, etc., and motor skill instruction, physical education instructors, coaches, etc. Table 3.3 presents Gagne's categories of learning, together with their LCVs, explanations, examples, and comparisons with the other taxonomies. The various kinds of learning outcomes associated with the cognitive domain are commonly taught in PK-12 schools, colleges, and universities. Gagne et al. Suggests that designers begin the instructional design process with cognitive goals before incorporating goals from the affective or motor skills domains. Instructional goals that are easiest to deliver via the web may be those of the cognitive domain and include the following types: facts, labels, basic information, relate to Gagne's learning category of verbal information, ideas, concepts, application, and problem-solving outcomes, relate to Gagne's taxonomy within his intellectual skills category. Learning strategies and study skills relate to Gagne's category of cognitive strategies. Matching the instructional goal to a learning outcome is the basis for establishing congruence with the remaining tasks in designing an online course. It allows for common understanding and consistency in communication among the design team. Gathering data on the instructional goal. To supplement the problem analysis, designers can gather data by surveying or interviewing subject matter experts, SMEs, and end users, and by reviewing extant data. SMEs are individuals who have expertise in the content, learner audiences, context, and so on, and may be course instructors, trainers, content authorities, and other experienced practitioners. End users are those individuals who have been targeted as potential course participants. They may be learners or trainees who are going to participate in the online training or have already participated in similar instruction. Existing learner data, such as course evaluations, grades or test scores, and absenteeism and withdrawals, provide information about learner opinions and success rates. When surveying participants or examining extant data, designers should review the organization's data collection and reporting policies. The use of human participants in collecting data may require permission from the organization and perhaps from the individuals themselves. Access and use of extant data requires permission from the organization and, in some cases, individuals. Results of the data should be presented in aggregate form so as to maintain individual anonymity. See Appendix A for additional information on data gathering. Writing a preliminary goal statement. Having gathered data about the anticipated instructional goal and its learning outcome, the designer writes a preliminary goal statement. At this point, the goal statement is a draft of the final version and will change as additional information about the other instructional components is gathered. An instructional goal should be written as an overarching statement that subsumes the steps of the entire learning process. While being stated broadly, the goal should not be vague or fuzzy. It should be written with enough clarity to guide the designer through the online design process. Generally speaking, the goal is directed toward the performance of the individual learner rather than a group of learners. An instructional goal statement focuses on what the learner will be able to do after the instruction is completed. Generally speaking, the goal is directed toward the performance of an individual learner rather than a group of learners. If constructivist learning approaches are used, then the instructional goal may focus on performances beyond what is expected of an individual learner. The goal statement is written in measurable terms so that an instructor or evaluator may ascertain the learner's level of achievement. Goal statements are learner-centered rather than teacher-centered. The focus is not on activities that a teacher performs, the teacher will explain the Bill of Rights or the instructor will demonstrate dance steps, but on what the learners are to know or do. Learners will describe the Bill of Rights or learners will demonstrate dance steps. The goal statement does not include lesson activities. Participants will read the manual on data entry, Students will complete exercises 1 through 3 in their calculus text, or the learners will complete the language arts worksheet. Rather, goals focus on the purposes for completing such activities. Goal statements are not about the assessment. Learners will take a quiz or achieve a passing score on the exam, because such tools, tests, projects, products, etc., are used to evaluate or measure mastery of the goal. Table 3.4 provides examples and non-examples of goal statements. Documenting the instructional goal statement. The procedures, data collected, findings, and the preliminary goal statement are included in the design document. The designer then continues to analyze the other three components, learners, context, and content, of the instructional situation, and may revise the preliminary goal statement based on the findings of these analyses. Changes in wording, outcome level, or conditions for mastery could, and are expected to, occur before a final version is written. Gardenscapes. Elliott and Calley studied the problem analysis findings and the problem statement to create their preliminary instructional goal statement. The course will cover advanced gardening skills. The course will help adults develop a garden for improving their home landscapes. As a result, they write the following preliminary goal statement. At the end of the instruction, the participant will be able to develop a garden that follows his or her gardenscape plan, which is based on a garden theme of his or her choice, and follows basic gardening guidelines and procedures. Elliott and Calley decided that learners will have to identify and apply basic concepts and guidelines in gardening and landscaping to develop and carry out a garden plan. Consequently, the outcome level for the instructional goal is designated to be rule-using within the intellectual skill in terms of Gagne's categories of learning, or at the application level of Bloom's Taxonomy Revised.